Good afternoon, everybody. As we do the annual draft press briefing, first and foremost, I always like to thank everybody involved with the process. First, my scouts, our staff, Coach Tomlin, and his group. You know, this is a year-long process. Sometimes it actually extends previous to. But we started this last May, continued throughout the fall. We get through the All-Star Games, we get through the Combine, we go the Pro Days, and we just finished up really 3.5 weeks of, you know, very thorough, what we think are intense type meetings where we have the types of discussions that we need to have to put the final touches on the draft. And we'll still do that throughout today and tomorrow. Wednesday we go through a mock situation for ourselves, and then Thursday, of course, is the draft. A lot of times we talk about the, you know, the interviews and the visits, and, you know, probably throughout the All-Star Games, the NFLPA game, the East-West and the Senior Bowl, the coaches aren't involved with that. Myself and the scouts probably talked to at least 120 kids throughout that process. The Combine, we get 60, and of course we get 30 coming back here for the individual interviews. I know sometimes, you know, I know we read about and talk about, well, this kid came in for an individual interview. Sometimes we had him at the Combine, sometimes we didn't. Sometimes we want more information. Sometimes there's some questions that we didn't get answered in the 15 minutes, and we can maybe spend a half a day with a kid as opposed to 15 minutes. So there's various reasons as to why various people come and when we get to talk to them. Currently, the roster stands at 74. You know, we added the AAF players when they were available to us. And usually those kids would have been players that we would have added during the future signing in January. When they were playing, they weren't available to us. But this season, they were at this point. And we're back up at 74. Right now, of the 74, when you look at the roster, 51 of those players have NFL experience. Not to say that that's good enough, because we are where we are. But, again, 51 guys on this roster have played at some level in the NFL as an active player. The addition of the three veterans, Steven Nelson, Mark Barron, and Dante Moncrief, we think enhances the roster as it's made up at this point. But really, the signing of those three doesn't preclude us from doing anything from a draft standpoint. Again, when we're going to be making additions to this roster, it'll be from the bottom up, and that's encouraging no matter what round we're going to be working in. We have 10 picks. We've talked about it before. We have 4 in the top 83. We have 10 in the top in the 219th. Our last pick is 219. Roughly, we'll be picking one every 20 picks throughout the draft, which is very encouraging. We'll see how it breaks down. We really believe every year we're picking from about 150 players, even though we've talked about over 400 in detail. We'll always get asked questions about the trade up and trade down. You know, we're always going to be open to either. Our scouts, the pro guys, will be making their calls starting today to visit with teams. We talk about it informally throughout the spring, but you never really get firm answers, because we don't know what you'd be trading up for, and teams don't know what they'd be trading away from. So until you really get closer to, you can have some ideas, this team's interested in coming up, this team's interested in going down. Until you actually get on the clock, those things will not happen in any great detail. Coach, anything to add?
No, usual process for me and us. Get an opportunity to come alongside Kevin and the scouts after the season ends. Some conflicts in the spring relative to the committee, competition committee responsibilities, and conflicting with some of the pro dates. But largely, it was a usual process for us, and one that we believe in. Glad I was able to get out in the manner in which we do to have conversations and gather information, and it's been a good process. But nothing out of the ordinary for us.
Questions for these guys?
Kevin,
city of 74 players currently on the roster. You don't have any exemptions this year, correct? So you can go to 90.
No, actually, Scotty, the tight end, will be non-exempt again for the second year. He won't count against, he'll be under the international player program. So we will be able to go to, I'm sorry, Jerry, we'll be able to go to 91 once we get the full roster set.
Kev, do you believe, or still believe, that the way to build a team is through the draft, and why, and how does free agency impact that at all any differently now than it did 10 years ago?
I don't think so. I think, you know, in professional football, NFL football, the best way is to draft and keep your own. It's a team game. It's something that we try to draft the right people, and if we like what we're seeing, keep them in the mix, and plug in the free agent where you need the free agent work. We've always talked about 1, 2, and 3. Those players should be significant players that we draft, and if they don't, if you don't have those guys work out the way you predicted they would, then that creates an issue where you may have to sign more free agents than you'd like. But I know we'll always believe in building through the draft and enhancing it with free agency. And I think you see more of that going on throughout the National Football League. Teams believe in the same type of thing because there's less free agents available. And sometimes that creates a really better market for some of the people to make it to free agency than we like to engage in.
How much does our salary cap impact that sometimes with decisions, you know, younger, deeper guys?
Yeah, I mean, again, the guys you draft aren't getting paid as much as some of the veteran players, so you hope that they are that type of player. And, you know, rules will dictate as to when you can renegotiate with those types of players. So it's really not so much the cap, it's how we say or how we try to predict that they will be who we think they are. And we hope we're right more often than not.
For both of you, you mentioned the free agents, getting Moncrief, getting Nelson, getting Barron. How much does that impact your approach going into the draft? Like, for example, you don't need to go into a first round or a second round saying you absolutely have to have this position or that position.
Yeah, none of those signings will preclude us from taking a corner, a linebacker, or a receiver. It just makes it a little less urgent because, you know, the people that we draft, the longer we can keep them off the field, the better for them historically. Now, there's been some players, Marquise Pouncey, first-year starter, great player. You know, Ben was forced to play because Tommy Maddox got hurt, and obviously the results were great. But you really want to go in with these players and delay them getting on the field as long as you can, because over time, I think coach would get comfortable with what they can do. But to have them just have to step out and play, more often than not, I think it's detrimental to the player. And if he loses his confidence early, it's usually not returnable.
How did it work out for Edmonds last year?
Edmonds played more than I think we predicted, and I think over time, throughout the fall, he got better. Was he ready for that? I don't think so. Coach can address that as well. But by the end of the season, we felt more comfortable. But had he been in a backup situation, I think it would have been more beneficial for him.
Yeah, his play was above the line, but it wasn't born out of an opportunity to earn. It was really just out of the lack of availability of others. And so you're less comfortable with that, but his play was above the line.
On the topic of wide receivers, first of all, from Mike and Kevin, if I can follow up if you want to, but your wide receiver room right now, if the draft board should go as such that you don't get the opportunity to address wide receiver early, how do you feel about the components that are in there right now?
I'm comfortable with the guys that we have in the room at this juncture, but my comfort is not indicative of how it's going to play out. We got some guys that need to be guys that are ascending, specifically James Washington, but you know the climate that we create for all second-year players. We're having similar discussions about James Conner a year ago. We expect great things from James Washington, among others, and we're excited about watching those guys stand and deliver.
And, Kevin, as far as the wide receiver class goes, can you kind of give us a thumbnail of what you think class is like overall, why you guys have had success where you have drafting wide receivers from about the third round on, guys like Wallace and Sanders and Brown?
Yeah, it's a deep class. I can't say that it's elite like it has been in the past, where I think you could easily identify one guy as the top guy. I think if you pulled 32 teams, you'd probably get, you know, variations on who they have as their top guy, because it's not, I don't think it's a universal class that has two or three elite players, but there's certainly players that are going to help the individual team. So I'd like it from that standpoint. And really, the receivers, we've had some good fortune with receivers. It's really no different than we evaluate any other position. And, you know, I do like to mention that they play with a Hall of Fame capable quarterback. So I think that doesn't hurt our receivers as they continue to develop.
Well, why does it seem to not work out with cornerbacks? And is it, have you evaluated the way that you evaluate the prospects and how you coach them?
Yeah, most of the corners that we've taken, you know, sometimes we forget about Bryant McFadden and Ike Taylor. They were significant starters on Super Bowl winning teams. Some of the other guys have made it, and they've been contributors, maybe not here, but they've moved on to other teams, and there was just different reasons why we made different decisions in each of those cases. And a lot of times it's a medical situation where the players we took were injured. So again, we don't evaluate corners any differently than we do receivers. It's fortunate sometimes it works out better.
You guys have been doing this a long time, so I would imagine experience comes into play. Do you have a couple different scenarios how the first round will work out? Or do you have a good feel of who you think might go before you?
We've done away with the mock drafts probably 10 years ago. Yeah. It was a waste of time, because we're just going to pick them as we pick them. And it's a very simple process. We're going to have 20 guys, and we know exactly how we will pick them. We'll determine that on Wednesday. We'll have that final approach. And it's 1 through 20. We're not going to vary from it. The only thing we'll vary is whether we're going to trade up or trade down. There's really no guessing to it after Wednesday. We'll know the 20 guys we're picking in the specific order on Wednesday afternoon. And when we get to Thursday night, that doesn't change. The only change is trade up or trade down.
So, Kevin, when you said you do mock on Wednesday, you're just mocking the guys in order that you would take them.
Yeah. We put ourselves first, and we pick a player. Okay, that player's gone. Now we put ourselves second and pick a player, and so on and so forth. And we'll go past 20, because if we trade down, then we know that you know, if we go to 28, who is it? Okay, we've already done it.
And in doing so, Ed, you kind of cover all the potential scenarios that you might be referring to.
And also in that, we'll identify a group of players that we wouldn't trade away from no matter what. If they were available to us at 20 and someone came to us with picks, we've already determined we're taking that player.
Kevin, if you talk about having to get production on picks 1, 2, and 3, if you look back on the draft class after 4 or 5 years, what's the criteria that you use to evaluate it? How many do you want to sign a second contract? How many should be starters? You know,
Well, I think what we look at is, you know, what's our record? What's our, you know, where are we, you know, coming out of 2019 or 2018? We're starting over. We were 9-6-1. So what we did collectively to that point wasn't good enough. But we, you know, we evaluate every draft pick, every position. We know why a player, we think we know why a player either succeeded or failed over the history. And we know where, you know, what rounds we've been better in and what rounds we haven't been. So we look at that each year. You know, when we get up to training camp, that's one of the sessions that myself and the scouts go through. We evaluate everything that we've done to this point, so that if there are some things we need to get better at, we focus on trying to get better at a certain position, at a certain pick, at a certain criteria. There's just so much that goes into how you come up with a final evaluation. But, you know, historically, Pro Bowl players, first ballot Pro Bowl players, we can get into the validity of the Pro Bowl at a different juncture. But first ballot Pro Bowl players, that there's something that we have to judge the players on, and it is historically it's 75% of those players that are first ballot Pro Bowlers are first, second, and third rounders. So you should get them right. And the higher you pick, the more you have to hold yourself accountable. You know, if you're only looking at 20 guys, we better get the right guys in order. When you get down into four or five, maybe you're picking from your top 100 players. Well, it's a little more subject to some error.
Kevin, are there any positions that you look at this year and say, okay, we don't need anybody there?
No. Mm-mm. We're open to, we're never going to close the door on any position, because if a great player is available at a position you think you're great at, you're probably going to pass greatness for mediocrity, and that'll eventually catch up to you.
So, Kevin, this a mock draft on Wednesday. You list your first round probably. If the first 19 guys that you have listed are all then taken, is number 20 your draft choice?
Yes.
Or are there extenuating circles?
Mm-mm. No, we don't evaluate. We put the board up as we feel that board is. I mean, we put it up, you know, again, after all the evaluations, and we rate players. And the player that we have rated fifth, we might not take at five, because the player at seven who's rated close to the guy at five is a better fit for us. So then we would take player seven over player five, but we wouldn't take player 17 over player five, if that makes any sense.
Kevin,
go ahead, Aditi, you've been trying.
Players in this draft do you absolutely love? That is, let's say at 15, not much capital is available, you would consider moving up for?
Well, let me say it like this. There's a lot of guys we like at certain levels. Man, there's guys, we talk about it all the time. Well, we look at them in the fourth round, we'd feel great about them in the fifth. So that means we love them at that level. And each level has a certain amount of players in there. Again, we're going to pick 10 players. I'm very comfortable in saying it'll be from our top 150 that we have evaluated. And we know that you just watch a draft unfold. In the first round, it's pretty generic. People have been talking about the top 20 players, you know, endlessly since this thing started back during the college football season. And then as the draft opens up, you get into rounds 3, 4, 5, it spreads out because teams draft for need. We try to avoid that, but it happens, and we know historically that we're going to have a better chance of getting guys we like in later rounds. Whether they're the right guys or not, who knows?
I'm thinking about what you were telling us a few weeks ago about moving up for San Antonio and Troy. Within that top 20, if the price isn't crazy, how many guys do you absolutely love?
There's
one, is there two?
No, it depends on the position. There can be guys we really like, wow, he'd be great. He might be the top player at a position that we're not necessarily focusing on in that first round. But all of a sudden, if he was there, and that's part of the 20 that we'll go through between now and Wednesday. And if they're there, boy, you better take that player. So there's really not a finite amount of guys that we love or wouldn't consider trading up for.
So, Kevin, then acknowledging what we were talking about with Jerry there about your board and how it takes the guesswork out to a degree, do you have to guess a little bit, though, and do you have almost markers in those first 19 picks ahead of you who you have to be cognizant of that might also be ready to take a guy you might be willing to trade up for?
Say that again, because you lost.
See, if you're interested in player X,
correct.
Is there still some guesswork, your board notwithstanding, but is there still some guesswork as to what other teams might be interested in player X at pick 5, 6, 12, 10 that you have to maneuver around if you want to trade up and get that guy? Like, how'd you guess to go up as high as you did to get Troy?
We didn't, you know, we felt good that Troy was, where did we pick him? I know we gave up a 3 and a 6 to go from 27 to 16. So at pick 16 during that season, we said, look, that player he's warranted in getting picked at 16. So we were comfortable in making that trade. in some years, I mean, you know, again, I've talked about this before, from, for San Antonio, we went from, I think, 32 to 25, and we gave up a 3 and a 4, and people say, well, you gave up too much. And again, he caught the touchdown that won the Super Bowl, so was it too much? No. But so every year it's relative. People talk about the charts. We don't use a chart, and we know other teams will use a chart. And we know when we call them, they're going to say, well, it doesn't match our chart value. And that's fine. They can do that. But in our minds, we have to spend what we want to spend if we want a certain player. And we have to demand, if teams are trying to trade up to us, we don't follow a chart. We know what they're saying, and that's up to them, but we'll make up our own values.
So you're not thinking to yourself, man, we got to get in front of Dolphins to get this guy, or we don't have to get in front of the Bengals to get this guy because they're a division rival.
Correct. What we look at is if a certain player that we think we would take at, say we would take at 5, is available at 10, then we say, you know what, this guy is coming to where he's available, we might want to think about going up to get him because he probably won't get to 12. But it's not the teams, because we're guessing at what other teams are thinking. We value what we believe and how we believe of the value.
It's just like the mock discussion. Our desire to move is based on how they're positioned on our board as opposed to how they might be positioned on someone else's board.
Disproportionate to your board where they are, that's what
is more of a driving force than maybe someone else's board.
Kevin, is there better value when it comes to trading maybe the second or third round from the first just because of the price? You can still get pretty solid players.
In a given draft, and I think this is one of those drafts where you can feel real good about the players you're getting in 2 and 3. So there's a good number. So that may drive the price down, in our opinion. Again, not following a chart, we may say, well, we like that guy, but he'll probably be available with our second, third round pick as opposed to the first, third round pick. So let's just let it play out. You know, if there's a good number, it may lessen the value. If there's not a lot that were available in 2 and 3, then sometimes that price goes up. I always try to put a name to the face. You know, we say, well, throw in a 7th. Wait a minute, you're throwing in Brett Kiesel. We got to be careful about that. Kelvin Beachum. We try to maintain some sanity about just say, well, just give them that. So, again, when you put picks together, you got to put maybe what has worked for you in the past, but you also got to say, if you give up a 7th in this year's draft, we might not be able to get that player that we like down low. So we just don't throw around numbers. We try to put names to the numbers.
As you went through this, is there any position that's deeper than you originally thought when you entered this process?
I wouldn't say there's any that are deeper. Sometimes we lose, we lose players once we get a pure physical on them. Sometimes we interview players and we're like, we just don't like that player, no matter who he is or what he is. And we try to quantify those different risks. But the group itself, it's really pretty much as we thought, you know, and it's deep numbers-wise in corners and wide receivers and tackles. And that's been really the trend over the last 2 or 3 years has been that way based on what's going on in college football. I don't believe so. I know sometimes there's questions about the new generation and the social media aspect of things, and we try to monitor as much as we can everything. We do extensive background checks. We do background checks. The league does background checks. The scouts talk to people. We get our own opinion. We may hear about a guy that, man, he just doesn't have a great reputation. You sit down and you talk to him, we may come away with a better feeling, and the opposite's true too. This guy comes in with a pristine character reference, and we sit and say, "No, I'm not so sure that adds up." So that can go either way. We are aware of what can happen in the social media world. We've talked about that. We have to be aware of it after we draft the players. Specifically, how we're going to manage them as they hopefully grow into the player you want them to grow into. We have to be ready for some of their challenges that they may not even be aware of as they turn into vets.
Three more questions.
I think
when you have
go ahead, Coach.
I think equally as interesting is you talk about trends in recent years is the number of sub-package players on both sides of the ball, whether it's defensive nickels or sub-package linebackers or third down back-like people or slot receivers. When you talk about what's trending and what's surprising from a depth standpoint, it's probably the number of guys that specialize in sub-package play and seeing them execute those assignments on film. That's an interesting element of what's trending. Nickel corners, sub-package linebackers, slot receivers, third down backs, seeing more specialization in more of those guys.
When it comes to picks that are close, how much do you weigh the need and fit versus the best player available, especially after the first pick?
It's always going to be a factor. If they're rated close, if that player, the player that's slightly below the other one is a better fit, then of course you're going to take him. But if you drop into a significant different depth in a round, you're going to make a mistake, and that's been proven time and time historically. Drafting for need has never built a winning franchise, and I can say that without ever really having studied it, because I don't know what team's philosophy is. I know what this team's philosophy, this organization's philosophy has been, since Coach Knoll and Art Rooney Jr. put this organization on a different level, and I know how they did it and why they did it, and Coach Cowher and myself and Tom when he was here, they've always built it the same way, and Coach Tomlin and I are still gonna value the better players. Of course you're gonna take a player here and there that might be a better fit, but they better be close. If not, it's a mistake that'll get you.
Mike, from a philosophical standpoint, you hear sometimes this guy's got a great physical skill set, but he lacks motor, he's not, doesn't try all the time, or takes downs off. Is that a turnoff for you, or do you look at a guy like that and say, hey, I can get to him, or my staff can get the best out of him?
I think there are variables in all of those discussions, and sometimes it might be relative to the number of snaps they play. You know, if you're a rotational defensive lineman at a major university, you're probably playing a more of a rotation than someone that does at a group of five. So there might be more loafs on the group of five players tape as opposed to somebody that's got more quality depth. I think you look at all the scenarios and understand that there's many layers to the discussion, and that's why we take so much time combing through each individual player and having the necessary discussions. It's easy to look at things that are attractive or things that are unattractive. We go beyond that and have discussions. Why is that attractive? Why is that unattractive? And then that leads us to whether or not we can tolerate it, adjust it, or enhance it, whatever it is in some way.
Final question here.
Kevin, have you ever crossed anybody off because of their social media behavior, your list?
No. It's not. Social media is a part of it. It depends on what may have been posted, but to my knowledge, we haven't. Usually, if we scratch a player, there's significant reasons as to why. And we always try to quantify the character makeup and the medical makeup in addition to their football makeup, and we put it all together to try to come up with that final evaluation. But social media is new, it's growing, it's not going to change. We recognize that, and I think we recognize that's part of the evaluation, but no bigger than the kid's personal interview with us. And we're going to take it all into account, but again, once we take that player moving forward, we have to be aware of, and he has to be aware of it, because that player, no matter what, he doesn't know what he's in for as he becomes a professional football player. And we talk to players about that when we think there might be some some issues that they might be carrying forward that they're not prepared for. And even if we're not going to draft them, Coach Tomlin does a great job at pro days and in the interviews, and we try to educate them, hey, look, as you move forward into this league, you might want to think about this just for your own success.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.